Good morning. My name is Cecil Prescott.
My name is Celeste Carey. And you're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 here in the metro area, 91.9 in Hood River and the Columbia Gorge, 100.7 in the Willamette Valley, and in the air, it's KBOO.FM.
Today is Monday, September 13th, 2003. It is approximately 8:05 a.m. Pacific Daylight Time. Thank you for joining us. And today, we have a fascinating conversation that we hope that you will participate in. So let me give you our phone number so that you will remember to call us. If I remember our phone numbers, it's
503-231. Mm-hmm. 8187.
Okay. 503-231-8187. Take that down and be prepared to be a part of our conversation. Now, many of you are familiar that in 1963, civil rights, religious, and labor organizations held a rally in Washington. While most of us remember Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech, many of us forget the theme of the march, which was for jobs and freedom. Today, 47 years later, National Day of Action has been called to continue to press for the fulfillment of the dream for economic justice. Joining us today are Greg Margolis and Peter Shapiro, who will speak about a local action hoping to secure the maintain Social Security and Medicare and the call for economic justice. So thank you, Peter and Greg, for joining us today.
Thanks for having us.
Good morning.
So, there's a National Day of Action coming up. What is that, Greg?
On September 15th, this is through Jobs with Justice, there's a National Day of Action in Portland. The Portland chapter of Jobs with Justice has a specific campaign that we're doing. And the campaign is basically consistent with your introduction. It is basically asking that we save the economy by creating jobs and keep hands off the social safety net, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. And I would go further to say unemployment benefits should be extended indefinitely until we're out of this economic crisis. So this campaign we're doing is a petition drive for individuals and organizations to ask our federal representatives to take this pledge. I can at some point, if we have time, read it. It doesn't take long to read, but it's basically what we said before, create jobs and protect the safety net.
Great. And Peter, what are some of the actions involved that day?
Well, we'll be rallying at 4:15 at 7th and Holiday.
6th, actually.
6th and Holiday, yeah. We will have a delegation collecting our petitions that Greg just mentioned and bringing them over to Senator Wyden and Congressman Blumenauer's office just so they'll know how people feel. We expect a sympathetic response there. I think it's especially important. I mean, I'm here today mainly to talk about Social Security because I just qualified for it a few months ago and discovered that it's accounting now that I'm retired for more than half my monthly income. I'm lucky to have it, frankly. I find it outrageous that just 5 years after President Bush got egg all over his face trying to privatize it, that the issue is being raised again with the same arguments and the same situation at a time when we need it more than ever.
Well, first let's hear the declaration, and then let's figure out how we can get people activated, and talk about how these points intersect.
Okay. Before I read it, I'd like to say to Peter, I don't think you're lucky to have Social Security.
No,
I think you worked hard for Social Security.
Point taken.
As did everybody.
There are people who just simply aren't making it right now, and I at least am.
That's right.
I
understood that. Fortunate. But I think it's important that we have the perspective that people work for these. You know, the whole framing of these issues is such that, for instance, to call those entitlements as though they're something that is being given to us rather than what we worked for, I think it's important that we change the framing of the debate on
that. Clarity in language is perfect. That's one point we will talk about when you read the declaration.
Okay. So here's what we're asking our congressional delegation to say. I pledge to oppose all efforts to diminish in any way our social safety net benefits, including Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. Further, I will act to improve the solid foundations of Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid by assuring that any additional funds needed shall be gained through placing the burden on the very wealthy whose incomes have skyrocketed as their taxes fell since the 1980s. Now, that's the safety net part of the pledge. Secondly, I pledge to work to develop a program that will create millions of sustainable living jobs. And as an immediate first step, I pledge to co-sponsor the Local Jobs for America Act. And that act, by the way, is in the House and the Senate under two different bills. If people want to research the act at all, it's H.R. 4812 in the House and Senate Bill or Senate 3500 in the Senate. And essentially, and I can talk more about this later, essentially it creates or saves a million jobs. There are more specific issues to that that I'd like to discuss as we go on.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 here on your dial, Metro Speaking. And we have two guests here, Greg, to talk about the rally and the Jobs for America Act. Peter, to talk about Social Security and how that safety net is being threatened, and both to talk about why it's really important for you to activate as a citizen, regardless of your age in this issue. These are home, I'm looking at Peter's shirt, or rather Greg's shirt, and totally distracted. Homeland Security. Absolutely. Well, that's what it is. It is Homeland Security, really, to bring it back home. These are issues that, as Greg had said, we have worked for, we have earned. These are not entitlements. This is some of the language that's being used. And what I find really ironic, and to have you kind of comment on this, Greg, is that the very people who are rank and file like ourselves that are buying into this are forgetting the fact that they're going to be dependent on it, too. They are working class, and if they're going to buy this top-down strategy that these are entitlements, they're going to be out on the streets trying to figure out which brand of dog food gives them their minimum daily requirements.
Yeah. Well, actually, I think it's worth noting that, you know, there's been so much talk in this election about the federal deficit. Well, in the first place, the people who are making the loudest noises about it didn't say boo when Bush is running up a huge deficit. Yes. By basically waging two wars and cutting taxes for the wealthy at the same time. There is no other time in American history that that has happened. And there was not a peep out of the deficit hawks at that time. The current administration, whatever my criticisms of it, and I have plenty of them, but they have not so far done anything in terms of spending that would increase the deficit. They are making an attempt, at least, to restore the taxes for the wealthy that Bush eliminated during his administration. The main thing that they have done, and I want to address this too, that could conceivably increase the amount of money the federal government has to spend is, over time, they missed a big opportunity in the health care reform bill that passed, which basically could have been a huge cost savings if we'd had a single-payer system passed instead of what we got. What we got instead was a very large subsidy to the insurance industry, and which really our reliance on private insurance for health care adds something like $300 to $400 billion to the amount of that's how much we waste on private health insurance in this country right now. And a lot of that money, you know, I think the bulk of it comes out of the taxpayers' pockets in one form or another. Either in tax breaks to employers who offer coverage to their employees, or in Medicare or Medicaid, whatever, you know, Plan D. And I think until we stop subsidizing the health insurance industry, and until we stop subsidizing the pharmaceutical industry, and until we stop subsidizing people who are making over $250,000 a year under the mistaken impression they're going to take that money and invest it and give us all jobs, it's stupid to talk about cutting the deficit by penalizing working people.
You're listening to KBOO. This is More Talk Radio. My name is Cecil Prescott. I'm here with Celeste Carey. We are here with Peter Shapiro and Greg Margolis Talking about the day of action on September 15th, actions are taking place throughout the country, and here locally there is a planned action in Northeast Portland. Give us a call. Are you concerned about Social Security? Are you concerned about Medicare? What are you afraid of? Or what do you hear about these things? Maybe we can begin to unravel some of the myths. Again, our numbers are 503-231-8187. And I think we have a caller.
Yes.
Let's turn to that caller. Jennifer, good morning.
Oops, we lost Jennifer. A little too early. If you can, please call back, Jennifer.
Well, let's get back to unraveling some of these things. As Peter was sharing and talking about the born-again deficit hawks, I realized that many times we have to unpack and unravel not only the language, but make things that have become myths. And have some real truth. So what are some of the myths that we hear about Social Security now?
I can give you one right off the bat, courtesy of my union brother and Scott Blau, who's the Directory of Retirees for the Letter Carriers Union locally. Scott pointed out, I hadn't known this, they talk a lot about how we've got an aging population because people are living much longer than they used to. So you've got fewer and fewer people supporting more and more people. Because the way Social Security works, the people who are working now pay for the people who are retired now. And then when they retire, the next generation of workers will support them and so forth. And the assumption is that because people are living so much longer now, the system is unsustainable. You're going to hear that a lot if you haven't already. Well, the fact of the matter is, it's all how you cut the numbers. It's true, if you look at people's overall lifespan, the overall average, people are living a lot longer now. But the main reason for that is because back in 1940, which is when the comparison is usually done, infant mortality was much higher. A lot of childhood diseases hadn't been conquered yet. But if you take people, the length of time people live past the age of 65, it's insignificant, the difference between now and 1940, maybe 2 or 3 years at most. And yet they are talking about raising the Social Security eligibility age to 70 by 5 years. That's actually going to shortchange a lot of people. It represents about a 2 or 3 years during which they're not going to be getting benefits that they actually, well, you can do the math and see where it works.
Well, basically, if you retire and you're no longer working to earn, you also, if you retire at 65, will not be eligible to earn that your Social Security money. You won't receive it, rather.
That's correct.
And so you've got the gap there that you're referring to.
Yeah.
And there's no plans to address that. And as you said, it's built on the fallacy that people are actually living so much longer that they're going to bankrupt the fund.
Right.
I think the biggest myth about Social Security in terms of this deficit, false deficit debate, is that Social Security is somehow connected to the deficit, and it is not. It's a standalone program. It's one that, by present standards, I think is viable till 2037.
2037 is correct.
And the other thing is, how do you think we get that Social Security fund? We get it by people working and paying into it. And the other way we get it is, well, we get it that way, but currently, the law says that if you make more than $106,000, you don't have to pay Social Security on anything over and above $106,000. Mm-hmm. Now, if we just change that law and had fair taxation, I have to pay up to whatever I make, and I never have and don't expect to ever make $106,000. There is absolutely no reason why people shouldn't pay up to the full amount of their income into Social Security. And that alone would make the system viable, assuming we get employment back in this economy.
I want to ask a couple, and I hope that you can answer this. A lot of the people who are serving and are elected capacities now, especially federally, many of them, not all of them, but many of them who are older have also served in the military, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. And so they still get their military pension and they draw a salary. And then they get the benefits of not having to pay into Social Security on that higher salary that they've got if they're making additional monies because maybe they're doing speaking engagements. Okay, so you got people who could as much as quadruple dip into any kind of income or safety net revenues, and yet these are the ones who are telling us that we're entitled and we're getting too much money. Well, and so we also need to frame it on what their financial status is as well.
Well, I mean, you're talking about people at the top of the – oh, we got a call?
But no, finish your
Well, you're talking about the people at the top brass there in the Pentagon, but there are a lot of people, for instance, at the post office who are veterans. Most of them are in the civil service retirement system, so they therefore don't qualify for Social Security, although the civil service retirement system is being phased out and we're being put into another system. That's what I'm in, where you get a smaller pension, which is supposed to make up for and Social Security is supposed to make up for the rest. But, you know, I mean, really, I don't want to dump too much on people who've been in the military, because there are a lot of vets who are simply not getting the care they need because there isn't enough funding for the VA.
Oh, trust me, I know. I would be up there with father and brother sitting for hours, yes.
And it all depends on, you know, what your rank is and whether you've been able to parlay it into a career.
We're speaking this morning about jobs, Social Security, Medicare, what is being done, what is not being done, and what we can do about it come September 15th. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. Give us a call. Are you worried about Social Security? Are you worried whether or not you will be able to get it? And we haven't even yet talked about Medicare, but we will. Let's hear what you have to say. Let's go to our next caller.
Good morning, Brian.
This is very important, and we don't hear enough of it on the, I don't watch the mainstream media much anyway, but I wonder if you've found out, let me give you a short story. I'll try and be really brief, because I know, I'm the living proof of what you're trying to combat, this country, or the government of this country, seems to be terrified in case the riffraff like us get a penny more than we're due. And I'm the living, I've gone from a six-figure income to damn near penury because I got sick once. And I, in fact, decided to take early Social Security, which you're entitled to at the age of 62, just to have a guaranteed income of some kind. Well, I'm trying to build up another business here, and I wonder if you know how many people in this I call it a depression have actually been forced to do the same thing. And another thing, Medicare is a bit of a con. I'm glad it's there, but as soon as you're eligible for Medicare, you're deluged by, propaganda from the private insurance companies to buy supplemental insurance because Medicare is not adequate for most people, they say. Mm-hmm. And so, the private sector intrudes into everything that we've paid for. And another thing is I'm looking into getting when I'm eligible, which is going to be soon. I worked in my home country, Scotland, for, quite a few years, and there's probably a small pension coming from there, which I'd like to keep there. But, Social Security people even ask, if I accept a small pension from my home country, hell, they'll deduct it from my Social Security.
Yes.
Brian, I got a question for you. I mean, if you were still in Scotland, your medical bills would be taken care of, wouldn't they?
Exactly. That's why I've never become a U.S. citizen, and why I fully intend to move back to either Scotland, France, or Spain before I'm too much old. I'm trying to build up my business as a viable thing. And what really irritates people here is, I'm about the world's worst employee, but I've worked all over the world, and often mostly for myself. And I describe myself as a small business socialist, and that really baffles people here.
Right.
So I'd like to hear some of your comments on that, especially people, I'm sure there's lots of people in this downturn that have taken early Social Security just to,
Right, to secure. Thank you, Brian.
Okay. I think, you bring up good points, and Peter bringing up the that the rest of the industrialized world is sane enough to have a not-for-profit healthcare system. I mean, we don't have to be socialists to have a not-for-profit healthcare system. This is something that's for the good of people and is a needed benefit for people, and we shouldn't be making profit out of it, and if you can't afford it, that you suffer. But I was just going to bring jobs back into the discussion just quickly. If we had jobs, when we have enough jobs in this country, when when we're healthy as an economy, then small business, and you called yourself a small business socialist, which I find perfectly understandable. And, you know, I believe that small business is always going to exist, and that's what should thrive in our communities, the restaurants, the stores, the, you know, we shouldn't be dominated by this corporate economic system. We should have community small businesses. And if we have jobs, then we're going to have a tax base. If we have tax base, we're going to have a consumer base. If we have a consumer base, we're going to have a need for small business in the community, and that's how the economy is going to thrive. But the way things have gone in the last 50 years or so is that we've gotten further away from local jobs, local economy, good family wage jobs, and more into outsourcing because of bad trade agreements, more driving down wages and benefits for workers. And we got to put a stop to it somehow.
You're listening to KBOO More Talk Radio. My name is Cecil Prescott with my co-host
Celeste Carey, and we'll go to our next caller. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. I wanted to talk about the fact that things have changed a little bit since Social Security was set up. Originally, women were not wage earners, and they received the Social Security that their husbands earned.
Good
yes.
point.
Mm-hmm.
And now a lot of women, maybe most, I'm not sure of the percentage, but are their own wage earners and are earning close to, if not sometimes more, than their husbands, or at least are eligible for their own Social Security. So there is much more funds going into Social Security because you have both genders contributing.
Yes, which speaks to the stability of the process.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and as Peter was saying earlier, the more people who are working and paying into it, the more stable the system is. And we had a guest about 6 years ago who really spoke to that as well. But Peter, any thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, the one I just want to follow up on something Greg said, which is that really, I read in the Oregonian, I think yesterday, they were saying Obama is claiming that the deficit really started under Bush, and they're saying, yes, but it's gone way up since Obama took office. Well, the reason is because so many people have been laid off as a result of the stock market crash in September of 2008, and the government simply is not collecting taxes on the same scale that it was, and that kind of affects it across the board. Now, you can respond to that by cutting government spending further and throwing more people out of work, or you can do it by having the government spend more money and pick up the slack until the economy gets rolling again and more tax revenue starts coming in. I don't think it takes a brain surgeon to see what the right approach is.
Yeah. And additionally, in addition to that, the very money that they're talking about cutting is the money that all economists will say goes right back into the economy and is the most stimulative of the money we have because people need it to live off of, and it's just basically shooting ourselves in the foot by going in that direction. And frankly, it's that's what corporations who work for profit and don't care about people, that's what the corporate philosophy is. Let's do everything we can to lower overhead and increase profits. And, you know, within the system, the way it's working now, we can't overcome that unless we demand that our representatives do something about it.
Thank you for calling.
Yeah, may I just say one
sure.
more thing?
Uh-huh.
Yesterday on C-SPAN, there was a very, very interesting discussion. A number of people spoke why we are actually not having a big crisis in Medicare. And I would refer people to the website cepr.net for more information on that. Or they can go to the C-SPAN and look for that as well.
Can you give us a thumbnail, a quick capsule summary? I've been interested in this, actually.
Well, there were people speaking on everything. It was
just the most important points. I mean,
one of the points was the point about the women, which I brought up here.
Yeah.
They had charts, and I really I wish I could say more, but perhaps there's another caller who can give you
more
the best of that. But I would refer people to cepr.net. which they referred people to at the end for more information.
Hey, thank you so much. That's great. Great information.
And also, you can send that to More Talk Radio on our page at KBOO and post it for other people to know. Just put the links up there.
Okay.
And that would be great. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Great. Let's go to our next caller. Good morning, caller.
Good morning.
Hello. Yes.
Hi. Yeah, my name is Emmett. I hope I'm not repeating something that was very hard to hear on hold, kind of went in and out. It amazes me the degree to which the Tea Party people are, like, being recruited for what's been a long-term Republican, I call them neocolonialists rather than neoconservatives, plan. Way back when Prince George was first running for office, I listened to one of his economic advisors, who'd been an economic advisor for his father, talk about it. The plan has been since Reagan to drive up, every Republican administration has driven up the budget so that they can turn around and say, we can't afford the quote entitlements unquote anymore. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what they've done. Now they've actually managed to recruit a bunch of people all excited about the possibility of, I don't know, making us all pull ourselves up by our bootstraps, I guess. But this has been going on since Reagan.
Sure.
Every Republican administration since Reagan.
Thank you for bringing up
the deficit and say we can't afford entitlements. And then someday everyone will save all that money on their taxes. The people who like to save money on their taxes.
Right. Hey, thank you for bringing that point. Greg wanted to respond.
Well, I agree with you, and, you know, I hate to act like a conspiracy freak, but I think it is a conspiracy. I think that you're very right about that. And whether it is or not, it's happening. And, you know, this inequity is something that we have to look at carefully. I have a couple of ways that we can fix this that won't really hurt people that much. One of the things that's been suggested by National Jobs with Justice and a lot of other folks is a tax on financial speculation. I think there's a bill pending on that.
That's DeFazio, isn't it, Greg?
Did DeFazio start that?
I think it is. DeFazio.
He
Oregon's
well
own.
Yeah. I apologize that I don't know the history of it as well as I should. But according to my notes here anyway, it would raise $200 to $500 billion a year, and it would be like 0.25% or some very tiny amount on each transaction that nobody would ever feel. But even that's too much for the wealthy and the people who control the economy. But there are many ways that we can fix this.
Can I make a statement?
Yeah.
All right. Go ahead. Can I say something?
Yes, go ahead, please.
Yeah, I think, you know, no single bill or piece of legislation is really going to be that effective until we start responding to this dominant Puritan concept that the working poor somehow aren't trying hard enough to make money, and the people with money deserve it, and somehow the working poor aren't working hard enough, they're not willing to make sacrifices, et cetera, because that's the dominant mindset. You know, there are no working poor on television. There's been a working class family on television since Roseanne.
Well, I think you bring up a valid point, and I think part of what you're saying is also the fuel for why the rank and file, you know, those folks like us, keep believing that this is an entitlement, and therefore it should be cut out because it's a drag on all of the rest of us economically.
And, you know, I talk to like, you know, crazed teabaggers, and they keep saying we need to reduce taxes to create jobs, and they honestly believe that.
Yeah.
Well, they honestly think that they work hard, they deserve what they get, and if the rich have money, somehow that's going to be good for everybody. They honestly believe that. We got nothing on the other side. We don't see working people who can't possibly make enough money to survive in this economy, which is increasingly true.
Well, thank you.
We don't see those pictures.
I have a comment on that, actually. I think part of the reason for the taxpayers' revolt, which is what you're describing, and the practical consequences, and I was living in California when Proposition 13, which was sort of the mother of all this nonsense, or the father, if you prefer. But if you look at the results long-term of this stuff, there's been this systematic shifting of the tax burden in this country downward.
Yes.
Rich people are bearing less and less of the burden, and working people are bearing more and more of it, not only in terms of the cutbacks and programs that they need, but they're actually paying more taxes proportionately. That's where a lot of that anger comes from, and I think we do have to address that. The other thing, and I want to make this point too, you mentioned the teabaggers. They get a lot of publicity and a lot of attention. It's not because their numbers are that great. It's because they know how to make themselves very visible, and they've also got some very generous funding from the Koch brothers and Dick Armey and people like that.
Well, and the Tea Party, some of the Tea Party heads, as you mentioned, also do control some of our media outlets.
They do indeed.
Which also frame the argument.
Yeah, that's correct. Well, our job is to frame the argument the other way to make ourselves just as visible as they are, and that's why we want people out there on Wednesday afternoon at 6th and Holiday.
Thank you, caller, so much. We had to move on to our next caller. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hi. My name is Eric.
Hi, Eric.
I just wanted to add a little, I'm a physician here in the community, and I'll start by saying, number one, is that I've been a huge supporter of the single-payer system since Wellstone and McDermott put together bills in the House and Senate some 20 years ago.
Keep pushing, brother.
Yeah. Well, number one is I would disagree with the statement that people are living no longer than they used to. With heart bypasses and stents and diabetic medications that we have today, et cetera, we're keeping people alive that basically would have never survived 20 years ago. It's been that much of a progression in medicine. So people are living longer. I'm not saying they're living a better quality of life, but they are living longer, excluding childhood mortality, et cetera, from the 40s and before vaccines, et cetera. So we do have an aging population, and it's going to age for a longer period of time if we continue with the same level of medicine that we're able to provide. And that's where the kicker is. Now, Medicare has a trust fund, just like Social Security. Those have been raided. And sure, if you theoretically look at how much money there is, yeah, there's enough money supposedly till 2037. But that money isn't there, and I don't know where it's going to come from. Number two is that people have supplemental insurance for Medicare for a reason, because they don't cover things that well. They don't cover a lot of procedures. My mom's going through stuff right now. She had to go out and get supplemental so she could afford to get a CT scan.
Okay,
because
well,
Medicare wouldn't pay for that.
Let's take that first point that you raised about the money having been raided and not being there. And Greg, you wanted to address that.
Oh, well, I think you're referring to Social Security, unless I'm mistaken. I think you're confused.
Medicare's been raided also.
To 2037?
I don't know. They've rated. Supposedly, there's an IOU there that all the money in the trust fund has been used to balance the general budget at one point or another.
Okay, but when you say supposedly, based on what?
Based upon what I read.
And can you cite some sources for us?
All different types of press.
Can you cite a couple, just one source for us, and I'll take advantage of a moment to go look it up here online?
I'm just making a phone call from the phone. I don't have all my information here in front of me. I'm just saying that if you want to look into it, the trust fund has been raided, that there is no money sitting in that trust fund except an IOU.
Okay, and that's given the fact that we're still paying into Medicare, because each and every one of us is drawing a paycheck unless we are earning at the capped salary is paying into it. So you're saying that money is just evaporating. Well, we're paying into Medicare too, aren't we?
Sure. Both of them.
Okay, well, that's
my
point.
They've both been rated by the federal government. They both have an IOU there.
But I think what you're saying, excuse me, let me interrupt just for a second. I think what you're saying is that they have put that money into the deficit numbers when, in fact, they're not supposed to. And I agree that that's happening. And that's criminal to me. I mean, it's just inappropriate because Social Security, I don't know exactly how Medicare works, but I know Social Security is a standalone program.
It's supposed to be off budget. It's supposed to be off budget.
That's right. And but they've been putting the numbers. They've been putting the numbers of the deficit using Social Security, which is again, dishonest to
The thing is, this country is again, this comes from economists. This country is at least $13 trillion in debt. There's another $50 to $60 trillion of debt associated with Social Security and Medicare. And again, I'll come back later on and give you all the information you want. This is not just pulling out of my head or pulling out of the sky. This is documented. There's an economist that just wrote an article from a major university about 3 or 4 weeks ago.
Eric, what's his name?
This country has $212 trillion in deficit between Medicare, Social Security, obligations in the future, interest payments, and what our national debt is at this point in time. Now, the second thing I want to say about Medicare...
Who's the economist? Do you know his name?
I forget. He's a major economist that just 3 weeks ago wrote an article. It was all over the web. It was everywhere. It was in the major newspapers. This guy was very realistic in his calculations. And again, I can't recall his name, but if someone wants to Google it...
Okay, I think we got your point, and we have a couple of calls behind you. So thank you for your call. And
just a real quick comment I wanted to make.
Well, no, sir, we got other folks lined up, but thank you so much.
You don't want to hear the...
And we'll go to our next caller. Thank you. You are listening to KBOO Portland. This is More Talk Radio, and we're here with Peter Shapiro and Greg Margolis, and we're talking about Medicare, Social Security, and upcoming rally. And we'll go to our next caller. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. Obviously, there's more money going out than coming in, and I think that's just just the way it is. And until we find a way to fix that, we're just in a bad spot. Another thing, I gotta say, when you guys use the word tea beggars, it really makes you guys sound dumb.
The word tea party, so we are trying to change that.
I know you do, ma'am, and I got to tell you, you stand out as the one that sounds intelligent. The other guys that say teabaggers, honestly, it makes you sound stupid, and perhaps you're the one that likes balls in your face. Thanks.
And if that was the gist of his thought for the process for the day, we're all in trouble. I want to go back to the issue that we were trying to define, because I was online trying to find some of the information to either shore up or dissolve this whole argument about what exactly is in the fund for Medicare and for Social Security. And I know that you both had comments for that. So can we finish addressing that? Because that really is another thing that's fueling a lot of the fear.
I mean, I think Eric, the doctor, I don't want to just completely dismiss what he said, at least not until I know what his sources were. I think he may very well be onto something, but he also may be interpreting the data differently. When I said that people aren't living as the extension of life past 65 isn't as great as it's made out to be, I mean, there are hard demographic numbers to back that up. It's true. He's making a very valid point that, end-of-life care has gotten a lot more expensive, a lot more sophisticated. I mean, people drag on their lives in agony for, months and months and months.
More
when
time.
When they would probably be happier and more at peace with themselves if they were in hospice. But when Earl Blumenauer tried to introduce that into the healthcare reform thing, just that the doctors should tell people what their options are instead of just hooking them up to a machine and putting them in excruciating pain and making some medical equipment manufacturer rich, he got shot down because the Tea Party people, I hope that's the appropriate term, claimed that he was pulling the plug on grandma, which is nonsense. There was actually a pretty good article in the New Yorker by Atul Gawande about this subject, and it has nothing to do with money. It has to do with our attitude toward death. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, money drives everything, including ethical decisions in this country.
Greg?
And Greg?
I don't disagree. We're in tremendous debt, and we have a deficit. There's no question about that. And Interestingly, not that I'm a big fan, but our previous administration had us at a zero deficit in debt when George W. Bush took over. I think the problems are across the board, but nevertheless, I think we have to keep that in mind, that we can get out of this debt and get out of this these problems with the deficit by having a healthy economy where people get family wage jobs. I just want to mention one more quick thing about a previous caller who was talking about we can't change this with legislation, bits of legislation. I agree. We need to make systemic changes. However, we have to try to work on both levels, in my opinion. One quick thing to be aware of, and to me this is another criminal thing that our politicians have done. Recently they passed a $26 billion jobs-saving bill that saved a lot of teachers' jobs, et cetera. But what most of the public didn't hear is that the only way they got that through was by making a $12 billion cut in food stamps. Mm-hmm. And this is part of this pattern of attacking the most needy people, mm-hmm. The people who are, surviving day to day, in order to put a Band-Aid on a problem. And it's really criminal in my...
Well, I think you raise a very important point in terms of how we frame this discussion, and in terms of how we the language we use. I think many of us, regardless of what our political persuasion is, are often caught without either the facts or by not having enough information. And I think one of the things that all of us are concerned about is our national economic health and for the health of working people throughout. One of the things I heard that many people said on the phones was that some people said there's a deficit, we're dying, we've fallen off the bridge. And one answer that the two of you suggested early on, if we have more people earning good wages, a lot of this becomes mute to the point. One of the issues you raised was a point. Jobs for America Act is one of the things you're urging for on Wednesday. Is that something that you'll be addressing?
The Jobs for America Act, or Local Jobs for America, it's called, would, and I don't remember the exact cost. I think it's $80 billion. It's hard to say that number. Would create or save 1 million jobs, but more importantly, they've analyzed it, and I don't have my old notes here in front of me, but they've analyzed it so that of 79 million of those jobs would be save $39 billion of the investment, because it would take people off social services and it would put tax back into the system. So this is just a way to show that jobs help solve the problem.
Exactly. You are listening to More Talk Radio. It is 8:48. We will go to our callers in a moment. Let me remind you that coming up on this morning at 9 is the OMO Variety Hour. And they ask, who will control and benefit from new forms of energy? The Movie Moles review Scott Pilgrim versus the World. And we hear another episode in the series, The Left and the Law. At 10 is Ear Cascadia with news, headlines, and commentary with Chris and Liam. At 10:15, Locus Focus is on a break. Instead, we'll hear Law and Disorder, which features a panel discussion on the recent climate change tribunal in Bolivia. At 11, Health Watch. On Health Watch, CNN senior medical correspondent Elizabeth Cohen discusses her new book, The Empowered Patient. And at 11:30 on Radio Zine, hear excerpts from speeches by two keynote speakers at the upcoming Portland Veg Fest, Dr. Milton Mills and Dr. Michael Clapper. But in the meantime, you're listening to More Talk Radio with Cecil and Celeste. Our guests here are talking about the Portland Jobs with Justice as they join in the nationwide Declaration of Jobs Emergency on this Wednesday, September 15th. And let's go to our next caller who's been waiting. Good morning, caller.
Yeah, hey, I got a question about jobs. First of all, I want to die naturally, not by machinery, but I guess I won't be able to control it. The question about jobs, the reason why we don't create jobs in this country is because of our huge, any connection with our huge debt with China. Also, them there, millionaires and billionaires, are they collecting on their Social Security accounts? Great program. Keep it up.
You know, without getting to a long thing about China, I recommend you take a look at the latest issue of The Nation, which has a whole cover story on it. It's an interesting issue, and you might want to look it over. Go ahead, Greg.
Yeah, I'd like to, you know, the whole idea of bringing up a country like China brings up the trade policy of this country, which is a significant and kind of umbrella issue in terms of jobs and fairness. Our current NAFTA-style model is encouraging outsourcing of jobs, using sweatshop labor, hurting workers both here and in the partner countries. And there's lots of, we don't have time to go through all of the ways in which this happens, but the statistics show that there's been a net job loss from these trade model, and yet they keep on trying to do more of them. Now they're trying to pass the Korea Free Trade Agreement, which would be the biggest agreement since NAFTA, and what again is expected to cause a loss of jobs. So we have to look at that in terms of the jobs issue.
Which raises a question for me is why is this country continue to do the things that fail? It isn't as if we weren't aware of the Bush tax breaks on the rich. It isn't that we weren't aware of these things. And it seems as if people are urging us to go back to the same old things that brought us to this situation.
It's not failing for those who are pulling the strings. That's the problem. Yeah. It's very successful for big corporate interests who now, unfortunately, and this is a whole nother issue that's really significant, and that's that our politicians are controlled by big corporate interests, and we need to have you know, fair elections and campaign reform and stop being able to have lobbyists control politicians. Basically, I think that's the answer to the question.
You know, I want to mention one thing before we go off the air today. One trend that has happened since the 80s, and we've been talking about the political consequences and so forth, the taxpayers are bald and the move to the right and so forth. One thing that has happened is that income distribution in this country has been progressively more and more skewed. If workers' wages were increasing at the same rate that they were increasing in the 25 years after World War II, the average worker's wage right now would be twice what it actually is. You had more and more wealth concentrated at the top. Consequently, you have more and more less and less buying power at the bottom. You have people going into debt in order to pay for their kids' college education, in order to make their home mortgage and so forth. That's why people started using their home mortgages as collateral, and that's why banks started cashing in on it with these bundled loans and so forth, and second and third and subprime loans. That's what really precipitated the economic crisis, is that working people simply have been struggling, not simply to get ahead, but to stay in place, and more they have not been succeeding. And the tax policies have a lot to do with that, because we are being taxed more and we're getting less for it, and the rich people aren't being taxed at all.
Let's go to our next few callers. We have a few minutes, and we'll try to get you all in. We will continue this conversation on a later program. So, but in the meantime, let's go to our next caller. Oops. Sorry about that. We have another caller waiting. Good morning, caller. Thank you for waiting. You're on the air.
Yeah, good morning. I'll make it quick. My first point is the earlier mention about saving teachers' jobs, but at the cost of food stamps. And I'm assuming that that was tied to an omnibus bill?
I don't know.
Okay. Well, usually those things are, and I think we need to get rid of omnibus bills, which connect saying, we'll save you, you get a little bit of your wilderness, but in order to do that, you need to vote at the same time on spending, let's say, another, $50 billion of military.
Right, tacking on a rider. Right.
Yeah, it's the same thing like here in Oregon, where in order to preserve schools and so forth, that it's tied to cutting the forest down.
Okay.
You know, I think that's it's just absurd to do that. But my main point is that ultimately we're not going to be able to fix these major problems that we have, jobs, whatever, if we don't get the military spending under control, because every so-called great civilization has shown has gone down because they ran their countries into the ground because of military, constant military interventions.
One among many, you're right.
I want to give David Wu credit here. I mean, I saw him debate his opponent, his Republican opponent on Friday, and I think the one point in that debate where he looked good is they asked him, what have you done to cut government spending? He said, I voted against the Iraq war.
Yeah, and it's huge. I mean, it really is. I mean, it's everything from...
It's a trillion bucks. Down the toilet, to say nothing of the human cost.
Yeah, that's what hurt Japan in World War II, all the way back to what hurt the Romans. So, I mean, it's ultimately with the kind of really, you know, insane is an understatement. The kind of money that's being spent on military, countries out there, very small countries like Costa Rica, who don't even have militaries or spend very little, they put all their money towards health care and towards education.
And education, correct.
Hey, thank you for your call. Thank you so much. We only have a couple of minutes. I want to make sure that we get the information out about what's happening this Wednesday again.
Okay. This Wednesday, we're meeting at 4:15 at the corner of Holiday and 6th, and then we'll rally there, and there are delegations that are going to go to the offices of Ron Wyden and Earl Blumenauer to deliver. I think at present we've gotten over 1,200 individual signatures and a number of organizational sign-ons to this petition asking for this pledge from our representatives. And then we'll march in the area. I don't know the exact march route, but we'll end up at Holiday Park for a rally at, I believe, 5:15. So it's going to be an opportunity to let your voices be heard. And if we don't let our voices be heard now, the Deficit Commission, which is going to make some recommendations in December, could very well start cutting back on the needed safety net programs that we have. So we need to let our representatives know that we don't want them to participate in that process and fight tooth and nail against it.
Don't be cynical. Don't be passive. If you don't speak up, you got no one yourself. You know, you have. If you don't do everything you can to speak up and make your voice heard, you can't expect the politicians to do it for you. You got to give them the encouragement and the support they need to do the right thing, and you got to criticize them when they do the wrong thing.
And most importantly, you got to do some information and education seeking. You got to educate yourself so that you understand exactly what is being offered when people say Medicare and Social Security are contributing to the deficit. We hope to have a guest on here within the next couple of weeks that will also discuss that. Who we had on here about 5 or 6 years ago who mentioned that Social Security was secure, it had not been raided, and that we did not need to be afraid of it because it had been set up to work in perpetuity. Well, hopefully we'll have that information on, but in the meantime, we do want to encourage you to do your research and to be engaged.
And again, that rally is this Wednesday at September 15th at Holiday Northeast 6 and Holiday in Northeast Portland, march at 4:30. Rally begins at 5:15.
We're meeting at 4:15.
4:15.
At the original site, the initial site, yeah.
Okay. And in case someone got confused by my bumbling of the information, how may they contact you?
You can go to the Portland Jobs with Justice website, which it's
jwjpdx.org.
Excellent. All righty. Thank you so much, and stay tuned here to your Community Connection, KBOO Portland. Coming up next is the Old Mole Variety Hour.